August 28, 2025, JEDCO Board of Commissioners meeting.
Okay, that's right. Biggest guy done is not eating the donut. All right, we'll call the meeting to order. I'm not Myra, but I'll do my best impression today. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. Gene will lead us.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Welcome the guests that I know about. We got Reed Smith from the parish. David Wolf and Philip Sherman.
Just Philip,
not David, from Adams and Reese. Oliver Haynes from the Housing Preservation Incorporated, over here. And Charles Parker from the Retail Coach, back here on the left. Anybody I miss? All right. We're going to swear in a new commissioner today, Mr. O'Connor, representing Council District 1.
So this thing's real choppy. Okay. Not me. It's just the way it's on.
Okay.
So raise your right hand. I.
I.
State your name.
Mike O'Connor.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will support the Constitution.
That I will support the Constitution.
And laws of the United States.
And laws of the United States.
And the Constitution and laws of the state of Louisiana.
And the Constitution and laws of the state of Louisiana.
And that I will faithfully.
That I will faithfully
and impartially discharge
and impartially discharge
and perform all of the duties
and perform all of the duties
incumbent upon me as
incumbent upon me as
a member of the Board of Commissioners
member of the Board of Commissioners
of the Jefferson Parish Economic Development
of the Jefferson Parish Economic Development
and Port District
and Port District
according to the best of my ability
according to the best of my ability
and understanding
and understanding
so help me God
so help me God.
And just so everyone knows, Michael will be appointed to serve on the Finance Committee and the JEDCO Development Court.
Michael, you want to introduce yourself to everybody?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
You want to introduce yourself to everybody?
Oh, sure, yeah, absolutely. Mike O'Connor, I work for Mississippi River Bank, representing District 1 here. Been with Mississippi River Bank for 23 years, longtime resident of Jefferson Parish, live in Gretna. Serve on the board of the West Bank ARC and POPI, which is Plaquemines Association of Business Industry in Belchase. Happy to be here. You have any questions? Happy to answer them, but that's me.
Does everybody want to introduce yourself to Michael? Just who you represent and where you work? And...
Let me just start.
Yeah, sure.
Introduce myself, but I'm Lacey Bordelon, Vice President and Chief Operating Officer of JEDCO.
Jimmy Bong, retired from the Home Bank, representing Council in Dino Banana District 2.
Teresa Long, Jimmy Parking Man. I'm on behalf of the Women's Business Enterprise.
Bob Stevens, Stevens Realty Group. I represent the New Orleans Metropolitan Association of Realtors.
Joe Yule, trying to retire.
You're not trying hard enough, Joe.
No. I'm representing District 3, Larry.
Hi, Michael. Billy Douglas with LCMC Health, Councilwoman at Large, Jennifer Van Branken's appointment.
Hi. Myra Pineda, the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce of Louisiana.
Hey, I'm Jim Martin. I represent the Jefferson Business Council. I'm an engineer.
Oh, that's an easy one to follow.
Wow, man.
So, Jim, what did you do today?
What did I do wrong? I don't even know what I did.
It was the engineer part. No. Jerry Bologna, we've met.
Hey, Gene Sauce. I Scott Walker's appointment to the board, and I run New Orleans Television, the visitor information television station.
I'm Linda Nugent Smith. I'm a realtor in real life, and I am Arita Bohannon's appointment.
I'm Mike Farenthold, not retired, Home Bank, West Bank, in the Jefferson Chamber.
Thanks.
Melissa Simeon, owner of Bennett Simeon Insurance, and I'm appointed by the Home Builders Association. I'm a Wolfram CFO and
Hi, Neil Schneider, the director of Churchill Technology and Business Park.
Hi, I'm Kelsey. I'm the director of marketing and communications for JETCO.
Scarborough House, director of facilities and IT.
I'm Kate with JETCO, workforce and economic development.
I'm Annalisa Kelly, director of strategic initiatives and policy. And the rest here are guests, but you're welcome to.
We announced all them.
There's one walking in right now. Okay, you can introduce yourself.
Stop. Wait, you got to introduce yourself. Hi, Paula Polito, Council District 5, representing Hansel Schubert.
All right,
thank you.
And I'm glad you're going to be on finance. The finance committee that we do review all the loan applications and stuff. And sometimes it's complicated, and we have a great group here. But it's always helpful to have people with banking history to understand what's going on over there. All right, need approval for board absences. We have Michael Adler, Jocelyn Frank, Joe Riccobono, Stephen Robinson, Chandra Williams, Melissa O'Neill, and Terry Tucker. Myra, you move?
I move.
Billy seconds? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
None opposed. Approval of minutes from July 31st. The minutes were distributed. Linda moves. Michael?
Sure, second.
Michael seconds. All in favor?
You're next, Joe.
All right. And now we have a presentation by the retail coach, Charles Park.
Okay, Charles, before you get started, I'll just introduce you all. I think, or your, you and your group, I think you've heard me before talk about at length our EPA Brownfield Award. So we, that primarily is the funds are used to do environmental assessments of major or even small brownfield properties across the parish. We've done a whole bunch of them, but a part of that grant we set aside to conduct market studies. It actually was going to be just one market study of an area, and then we realized actually it'd be really valuable when we expanded the targeted area of the whole parish to ensure we did market studies of a few really key corridors across the parish that had a high amount of vacancy and brownfield properties. And so Janet, before she left, she and I worked with a variety of council people and respective cities to identify certain targeted corridors that were really important to their reuse plans and redevelopment plans. We did an RFP and selected the retail coach. They've come in once before to meet with all the elected officials and stakeholders. I think a few of you may have been in one of those meetings as part of your, you know, real estate or other affiliation. So thank you for the stakeholder input you've already given. And now Charles is back in town to kind of share some of the preliminary findings from their analysis of various demographics and data, as well as summarizing the stakeholder input and providing some case studies. And from here, we're going to be meeting with all the mayors of Gretna, Kenner, and Westwego, and a few other folks. But we want to first present to you all what they've done so far. So thank you, Charles.
Yes, I'm Charles Park, again, the retail coach. We've got a full day ahead of us, had a full summer. Really looking at, you know, the main four corridors, that kind of the main piece that we looked at. The corridors, obviously, it's the West Glen Mall, Airline Drive, Westwego, and Gretna, kind of the 5th and Franklin corridors around downtown Gretna were our main study areas that we looked at. And it encompassed everything from some of the data components that you'll see through here, stakeholder aspects, but then kind of our specialty is through. We work with communities across the country to assist with retail recruitment and development. So we kind of have a special lens looking at where some of the case studies or options or maybe help the visioning process for next things that can be. We've kind of got to a point, we've got our final report, summary report, essentially is going to be about 100 pages. So I'm trying to condense that into about 10 minutes. So it's very high level today, but we'll at least give you a taste of kind of what are the type of things that we've looked at and kind of where this thing is headed. Overall, so we did a baseline kind of look at the main four corridors. So everything from what's the current market conditions, what's the vacancy rate, what's the absorption, how are things changed the last few years that we've looked at, I'm really good at just everything you look at. If you're looking at those four areas, what's a snapshot of what it looks like today, just to get an overall component to it, for obviously the main four areas. But looking at airline drive, one of the things that we like to look at is not just drive times or radials. We like to look at cell phone data, see where people are actually coming from, especially in markets like this where you have, you know, natural barriers for consumer shopping, workforce, things like that. So this is a heat map of airline drive, and it really was interesting the fact you'll see some comparisons to Esplanade Mall because they're pretty close to one another and for all intents and purposes. But with all these show, I think the workforce area aspects, I think, of airline drive, because there's not a ton of retail out there compared to some other areas. It is very much workforce driven. We've lost some pieces out there in terms of employment aspects, but the overall draw that that region still has as a major travel corridor, one of its strengths, it really highlights into St. Charles Parish and really throughout the entire region of where there really is still a regional draw for that area, I think is one of its strengths that we look at. But instead of looking at, you know, just the radial stuff, we look at that custom trade area based on the cell phone data. And the market for that part of town is, you know, 250,000 people. It's kind of the baseline of who you have access to on a regular basis for it. And it's, you know, it's traditional corridor that we looked at. So we do the full SWOT analysis, try to hit some high points here. Obviously, the weaknesses there is the, you know, the airport moving its operations and try to, I don't say holding a sausage in a sense of what's going to happen with some of those properties, but the uncertainty there is really a big component of figuring out the next steps for what that corridor can be. When we talk to the stakeholders, I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit here, but talking to the stakeholder, I think the vision for that is really probably geared to a little bit more towards industrial aspect. How do we make sure we have things to support business from that aspect more so than maybe community retail or entertainment aspect that really is still based in the industry, basically, especially because of our connectivity back to some of the business parks outside of our parish. So really overall a big piece, but it has a very lot of blank space for a lot of opportunity for that. So we explore some of the options for those types of corridors. We have some case studies looking at that of where do we go for airline drive for that. Obviously the Esplanade Mall is kind of the, probably say it's the most popular, but it's one people have the most opinions about because it is. When we talk about retail outfits and overall economic development, it's with the lightning rod of the talking component that we look at. When we look at that, it has a strong draw through even past Fort Metairie in that area. When you look at kind of the density that we have through here, it has a little bit of a higher foot traffic or higher overall component, looking at 275,000 people is the draw. And that's based on the target, you know, and some of the retail in the general area. We've had to expand it a little bit because you don't get a ton of foot traffic data from an empty mall, but at least gives us a good feel of what that area looks like. And I think when we talk about the mall, it's the potential for it is a really exciting piece of it. There are some headwinds in terms of the ownerships, how it's parceled up, and it's not one, you know, one big piece ready to go. There are some challenges as we look at it. But when we talk to stakeholders, there seem to be a lot of optimism on what it could be, especially because mall redevelopment is kind of mainstream in a sense that there are a lot of examples to draw from. There are a lot of investment opportunities and developers that have kind of paved the way to say, hey, this is what we can do to look at it. But everything from the mall site itself has some challenges. Obviously, the access to it, kind of the secondary access, you're going through a neighborhood, not ideal for a mall from a retail perspective, even though you do have, you know, the frontage on the north end, how it's laid out. But the fact that we've got a Target in there, that is a strong anchor as we sit here today. It has some really interesting pieces for it. I'll come back to the mall. We've got some cases on the backside of this, I'll jump back to that. I want to give an overview of these first. Downtown Gretna and the 5th and Franklin Street corridors was obviously the next one that we're looking at. I think most interesting here is kind of seeing the creep that we're slowly getting across the bridge. I think that wasn't something we're necessarily expecting to kind of see. You know, our core is really starting to cross over. Kind of the connectivity that we have to higher densities and kind of that aspect that we can piggyback sometimes off the downtown New Orleans aspect. You know, the proximity that we have to that area, the connectivity that's in place. However, the disconnectivity in terms of the streetscaping and fine, it doesn't feel like it's connected, even though it really has great connectivity and through the thoroughfares that are between the two areas. It doesn't feel like it's a part of our extension of what it could be when we look at it. But overall, looking at over 200,000 people within our trade area there based on what's already there, and that's looking at the restaurants in place, the wine bar, Brown Butter, and kind of the existing places there. knowing that we have a handful of bigger projects still coming, that's going to probably even expand this even further. But we have a very strong foundation. And when we're talking stakeholder, I think this is kind of one of those things that's a secret that kind of waiting to get out, in a sense that we had people and talked to folks. I've got friends that didn't know anything about that area that since we started this, I said, hey, go check out Common Ground. And he goes back almost every weekend now. He's a little bit of a coffee head. He goes back and checks out. He knew about some of the other ones that had different location across the river. They've come out to the Gretna on a few Saturdays and seen things. And you know, the Gretna Music Festival coming out in October as well. These types of things, I think, really has a lot of optimism for this area from some of the stakeholder components as well. And then downtown West Wego is a little bit different story. It's a little bit in a different category on its own, but we did want to look at it because there are some opportunity there. Talking with the mayor there, talking about obviously the farmer's market, what's in place. Obviously much more local trade area that sits now. There's not a ton of draw to that area. Looking at, you know, around 80,000 people is kind of what we consider that trade area as we sit today. But there are good bones in there. Like I said, they do have some case studies in the sense of proof of concept that you can't draw with the farmer's market. But like Gretna and West Wego, that those downtown areas, the biggest challenge is they're terminuses. They're not thoroughfares like airline drivers. You're gonna go through it either way, you have that access. You're not gonna stumble upon downtown Gretna or downtown West Wego for any sense. You have to have a reason to go there. So when we're talking about kind of our next step recommendations, highest and best use and things like that, a lot of that is going to the activation of getting people off the main, off the expressway to take that turn and to see what exactly is right there in front of them. To go and see that at dinner down there last night, to see the bridge at night, going and walk on the water, like that's the best view in the city. It's kind of in a sense, it's like being in Jersey looking at New York City. You know, the best views are on the other side. And kind of the hidden amenities that are part of those communities are things that we're trying to uncover, kind of help craft that story moving forward to look at it. Going back a little bit towards the stakeholder feedback, obviously, you know, strong corridor there with airline drive, I kind of hit on that a little bit. You know, there's obviously a desire to capitalize on what's left there as a void. I know they had film and movie studio options already kind of put in place. That's a potential bucket to go after, to look at. However, it's kind of disjointed. There, even though you have some high traffic counts out there that compare well to other areas, just driving through there, the energy doesn't feel the same by any means. Even though you have the same numbers, the same data, it doesn't feel the same. When we go with site selection, it's not a science, but it's a real thing in terms of how people make their decisions on site selection. So understanding what are some public investment aspects, whether it be the city, the parish, what are the things that can help start that aspect and figuring out that, hey, this is an area for investment rather than something that, hey, the airport's gotten left and moved up to the north edge. This is kind of left behind. We want to make sure we avoid that moving forward. Les Mall, again, a lot of powerful conversations around that, a lot of ideas. Everyone believes it can be a transformative project. I think that's there's no doubt about having a site like that at a regional mall, historically speaking, that's been vacant for so long. A lot of desired uses, everything from IKEA still being kind of a retail component, going and getting kind of turning it inside out, being a power center type of option, which we've seen a lot of malls do. But also a lot of ideas thrown around of being kind of the downtown core, kind of building a new downtown, having a new community center, venues and event spaces. There's been back and forth conversation about how will it ultimately compete with the amphitheater? How will it be compete with Surge? How will it compete with other amenities already in the region? We get to like use sports as an option, sports facilities. We have some of those already in place. I think that's kind of where some of the stakeholders were kind of trying to figure out what's the right components to it that it can be successful without having to compete too much with some of the other amenities in the region that already exist. And I think kind of finding the right combination of some of those will ultimately determine its ultimate success as a redevelopment project. Gretna and West Wego, again, these are ones that, you know, especially Gretna, people feel is underutilized. And, you know, it is still a hidden secret. But again, it's the lack of connectivity. It's not as activated as it needs to be, but there is certainly opportunity for it for redevelopment. Housing was a big concern. We talked a lot of stakeholders for Gretna. They have a high degree of renters, from around 50% or higher in some areas, that they really have a need to get first-time home buyers in there to activate the ownership aspect of it. While maintaining its walkability and having it be that really neighborhood core where you don't have to leave for some of these markets to look at. Before I get into some of the case studies, a few of the things that are additionally in the report that I didn't want to put you to sleep on this morning, there's all the leakage analysis for all these areas we have in place. Got a little bit of love-hate relationship with those because they don't always tell tell the whole story. But within 3 miles of the mall, I think we've got $1.4 billion in surplus. We are selling more than what's coming in here. So that's one of the reasons I don't fully take into the leakage analysis, because they don't necessarily tell the whole story. The challenges for leakage analysis is A1, and you're in metro areas. It's hard to draw a polygon and then say this is where people shop and kind of compare it black and white. And then also tourism aspect plays a big role in it, because you're comparing resident spending to businesses selling to anyone. So there's not always apples to apples comparison there. But despite there being and surplus, 1.4 million surplus around the mall, so that means we're selling $1.4 billion more than we would expect than the people living within 3 miles of the mall. We still have over 30 million shortfall in grocery. I'm not meeting the grocery demand by a long fall in a market we're meeting every demand by a lot. So there are some pieces that still come out of that that are very interesting to look at. Clothing, grocery, two categories that stand out from there. On Airline Drive, we got the 1.7 surplus, but we were 2 million short of QSRs for whatever reason. We don't have enough QSRs out there. So there are some pieces that go into it, and we start digging into some of the numbers that are all going to be in the final report, and we'll have discussion outlining all of that. But okay, I didn't want to include all that too much today. Probably already over 10 minutes, I apologize, looking at things. But beyond the leakage, we also look at actual void analysis, where we put those leakage numbers into play with brands. We take what are the brands that co-locate with what's already out there. So whether that be the few hotels, what are the restaurants that like to be by Hilton Hotels? We go through and we highlight those and say, hey, 67% of the time, you know, we have a Panera that's going to be out there. So I think some of the ones that stood out in that report, like Chipotle, Dunkin', Panera, some of the brands that probably highlight why we have a leakage in fast casual options. Same thing with the mall. Everything from, you know, IKEA, Texas Roadhouse, Ulta, Dick's Sporting Goods, some of those brands that co-locate with Target that we already have are absent from that market. So we do take a deeper dive into some of the recommendations, highest and best use that come with some of those aspects to look at. So there are more data numbers, but it's a little bit too early to get into those pieces. I did want to pull up a few of the case studies that we've drawn note to. Talk about mall redevelopment aspects. We'll talk about what does mall redevelopment as a whole look like. So I've got a few options here. This is one out up in Fort Dodge. And you kind of see the footprint behind it. It's a traditional mall, much like we have here. And this is one that in Iowa, the city got involved, and they've kept a few of the pieces of it, but they basically scraped a lot of it, made a community center with pavilion basketball courts, kept their front line traditional power center, shopping center, and have made basically lots for redevelopment where they put out for RFP or find developers to say, hey, we want you to basically quadrant this out and create your plan, pitch us your options to create more of a community center holistic approach rather than an indoor shopping center mall. Along the same lines, this is in Forest Acres outside of Columbia, South Carolina. This one doesn't do as quite as good as showing the mall underneath, but it was a traditional elongated mall through here. For that one, they scraped the entire thing. They're putting a 120,000 foot Kroger Marketplace as the center core there. They carved off, I think it's 6 or 8 acres on the north end, and the city is putting in a incredible public park space, small amphitheater, green space, turf fields, basically common areas for to hang out and be outdoors. And they've included residential here, which is a big component we see in a lot of mall redevelopments that I would imagine would be part of any discussion for Esplanade Mall. How does residential potentially fit into the overall new mix of those things that we will have discussion on? And then really just reimagined everything else with shop space and making it more of a small community, a destination walkability component to it, mixed into reimagine what the mall was. And then last, I know this is really small, but this is one in Gastonia, and it's interesting because it's very similar to what we have here in town, because they have a Dillard's and a Macy's that own their building. So they're having to redevelop around those. So essentially they're scraping everything but those two, putting a grocer here. This is all gonna be residential. They're reworking the road aspect and creating shop space in between. So there are several plans in there. Really, for our hope is to vision what the mall could look like with some of those partners moving forward. Other examples of this, I know we have a former school redevelopment project potentially there in West Wego. We do have a few of those come in there. Talking with the mayor, sounds like residential might be on the table for some of those things. So trying to provide some examples in other markets that we've seen across the country where they have done successful redevelopment projects of former schools, whether it be Greenwood or Columbia, where they've done some really, really neat projects, maintain that historical culture, and it's been a linchpin for redevelopment for other things around creating that density. Because when we talk about retail, you know, the old adage is retail follows rooftops, and having the activation of the residential component to it is a major stepping stone that we see for other businesses wanting to be there to serve the people that move in. And then looking a little bit at Gretna, we have a few examples up here of what Franklin Fifth Street can look like. I know we have a few examples of this existing on UEP Long, some of the design standards. But Cotton District, Charcoal, Mississippi, I'm a bulldog, so a little bit biased here of what is maybe included, maybe not, we'll see. But it is a ULI, it's very much studied case study for new urbanism, looking at how do you create neighborhoods, create density, create little opportunities, but also create first floor business opportunities where you can do mixed use in areas where you don't see vertical mixed use. Vertical mixed use is extremely hard to pull off in a sense. This is the reason you only see it in the Northeast or LA or San Francisco or mega populations. I mean, there are cities of 1.2, 1.5 million people where vertical mixed use is still very hard to pull off. It's tough to find the business component to it. But there are these pockets that you see in smaller markets or rural markets or neighborhoods where it can be right-sized to work. And I think that corridor on Fifth Street in Franklin is a good candidate for that. Where you have the character, you also have, you know, the smaller housing components where you come in, and when you're looking for affordable housing and first-time home buyers, density is a big way to make the whole thing pencil for the developer, right? Having more units in there, you can do more to have it be on the end user, can have a first-time home buyer find it. And I know density can sometimes be a four-letter word in development, but finding the right components to an example can be the right pieces. I'm saying some of these look like could be taken off of UEP Long, honestly, with some of the existing type of residential that we have to look at. How you build that up and create that overall holistic approach that, you know, leadership there through our stakeholder meetings have shown they want. Other examples come Roswell, Georgia, north of Atlanta, kind of reminiscent of part of Fifth Street already. I know we have a few restaurants that are in traditional home type styles. You know, that side of the road seems to be missing some of the streetscaping aspect. I know we've got the street project coming on the pipeline as well. But we do have options there that we're talking about, what are the pieces to go. And not necessarily go vertical, but there are some first and second story options and say, hey, there are examples of types of development that can achieve what it seems like, and be the council members that we've talked to, other stakeholders, to get that corridor, to activate it, to be walkable, to increase density without going skyscraper or hard density or packing a ton of people in there into apartments, which I don't think really is the ultimate gateway for some of those pieces. So I know that's a lot to pack in. Want to give you just a little bit of taste of what the final report's going to have in there. It touches a lot of different points. Be happy to answer any questions if I didn't take up all my time, or I know there'll probably be more as we get to the final report that we'll have submitted next week as well.
Bob? So in your Starkville example, was there historic preservation involved in that?
And some component, I don't think the entire district was. I think some of the units were, but I think there were some of the offshoots of it now as it's kind of grown over time that have not been, it's been organic built off of that. But I think the original spark of it was with Dan Camp, who was the original developer of it. There were some alphabet soup involved in a few of those pieces.
Anybody else?
I can't help it. The city of Kenner has lost its base because it was, you know, damaged and torn down, et cetera, and they're operating piecemeal all over the place. Was there ever any thought of relocating the actual city services to the mall, which I understand it did before, and the mayor and the old mayor didn't see eye to eye. You know, I get all the political stuff, but wouldn't it make sense to use that as a base? Because it's going to cost $40-50 million to house all of those services anyway, why not use this as a base and develop around it?
We have seen it, and it was discussed. I probably glanced over that a little bit. Some of being a civic center, have that be your core, because where that's just the city itself, sometimes it's police or fire and built into, that's your daytime population. We're talking about restaurants and retail. Having all those jobs concentrated in one area is one solution to crafting your pitch to, hey, if we bring in this many daytime jobs, 500, 600, 700 jobs, by the time you add everybody up and things that come with it, it can make your out parcel, your other pieces, that much more attractive. So yeah, that was definitely one of the pieces that we talked about, being a civic center, community core aspect of it. How do you maybe plan for one portion of it being for city services, city hall, and have that next to, green space park, and you can still have room for a hotel or an Andretti's type place or some type of entertainment component to it, or ball fields, whatever it might be. That's definitely one of the verticals that I think does make sense, and that we do have pieces for. I mean, everywhere from Eastvale, California is building their civic core on a piece very similar to pieces. I know there's two or three in South Carolina and in Georgia right now that have plans in place to relocate their city center, build new city halls on it. So it's definitely a strategy that we've seen, and it'll be discussed. I'd say I glanced over it here, but it is something that was discussed in the stakeholders and will be prevalent, or at least brought up in the final report as well.
Linda, we've discussed this ad nauseum with the current administration, the previous administration, and the councilwoman. One of the concerns is being a region so heavily reliant on sales tax is a hesitance to taking one of the most well-situated pieces of retail property and taking it out of retail commerce. It's not to say that a portion of it couldn't be reserved for this and you build off of that core.
But zero, it's getting zero sales tax.
Well, there is, right, and there are other areas that are coming up that are reproducing some of that sales tax. This could still be used as a draw, and you don't necessarily have to tear the whole thing down. You could use a core of what's there. So, but I know Mike's mentality, and I know it's going to be a political, sales job, but it makes sense because they're still operating in ridiculous situation right now.
Charles, when you said IKEA, how did that not work at Esplanade?
another hour and a half.
That's the first time somebody said something. I was like, wow. Yeah, everybody I know says they want to go to an IKEA. There's no one around here. Why does that fail to work there?
I think the fact that you've got so much connectivity. I mean, you've got a ton of rooftops. You've got redevelopment coming in some of the areas. Buying that anchor tenant to go with Target, I think, is one of the things that's going to have to be explored. And figuring out what's going to make sense. We've got some infrastructure there. What uses can go in and take down an anchor space? We're not maybe necessarily having someone to tear down the entire mall. What can we continue to use? But also, it's finding those tenants of what makes sense. And part of it is, how do we make sure that we do the proper narrative to recruit them to Kenner rather than Metairie or New Orleans proper or other parts? Because they're also competing. IKEA is not going to come in and drop multiple locations.
The impediment historically has been the fact that you don't have a clear apron of land. You have the Target and the Dillard's that own their own footprint within there, and you can't get that full apron. That being said, IKEA is still looking in the market, and they're looking at smaller format, smaller footprint stores now in more urban areas. So that is a possibility.
It's how do they all fit together, and what does it make sense? I mean, someone like that is a whole lot different than a Walmart in terms the desire for the city or the parish or might be to maybe fulfill. Walmart may be willing to pay it, but does it make sense in terms of what we want to see there culturally, for lack of a better term, or something like that? So there are a lot of interesting pieces for it, and I mean, the higher tier brands are probably going to want some higher tier density in the area too, but to your point, that pretty residential or civic takes off the tax roll. So what's the balance there? So it's, how do they all fit? It's a challenging puzzle, but there are a lot of case studies of how they figured it out to get back to a net positive, to where you are creating the destination that is desired and is profitable, but it also is a fit for the community too. So it's got to check more than just one box as we kind of look at it holistically.
Thanks, Charles.
Yeah.
Your 10 minutes just ended. and Lacey's going to take at least a few minutes with hers, I know, coming up, so we've got to move on. Any public comments on the agenda items today? Okay, on unfinished business, we have a resolution appointing Michael Connor to the Board of Directors, Jedco Development Corporation, and removing Brian Hyden from the Board of Directors of the Jedco Development Corporation. Michael?
Sure. Move? So well, let me just make sure I stated that at the outset, but on page 8 of your package, you do have the resolution. Mike will be serving on both the Development Corporation and the Finance Committee, but this resolution is to appoint him to the Development Corporation and officially removing Brian as a member from the Board of Directors of the Development Corporation.
And Jim, I will move.
And I will say.
Thank you. Any reservations? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
None opposed? Motion carries. Now, Lacey, do I read this first and then you
yes.
talk? Or do you,
yes.
Okay, I read this first. Okay. A resolution approving the form of and authorizing the execution of a lease agreement, an agreement to issue bonds, and any and all additional documents and certificates deemed necessary in connection with the granting of a favorable payment in lieu of tax arrangement and the potential issuance of not exceeding $16.5 million in aggregate principal amount of taxable and or tax-exempt revenue bonds of the Jefferson Parish Economic Development and Port District for the acquisition, renovation, and improvement of approximately 200-unit senior living housing apartment building, including parking, located at 2301 Idaho Avenue in Kenner, Louisiana, which is to be owned by Westminster Tower, LP, including its affiliates in Jefferson Parish, and providing for other matters with respect to the foregoing Lacey Bordelon.
Wow. That was awesome.
What breath.
That was awesome.
Wow.
That was awesome. Can you repeat that?
I'm thinking the same thing.
So yes, our applicant is Westminster Tower LP. That's a limited partnership with Housing Preservation Inc., which is a nonprofit. The project is the acquisition or rehab of Tower 1 of the Westminster Tower Senior Affordable Housing Development in Canada. That's at 2301 Idaho Avenue. HPI, or Housing Preservation Inc., is an affordable housing owner and operator based in Memphis. They focus largely on the preservation and rehab of affordable housing for the elderly. They have about 100 properties throughout the country, and they use Silver Tree Residential, which is an affiliated company, to serve as sole manager of all of their properties. Westminster Tower LP just acquired Tower 1 on August 5th. And I'm stressing Tower 1 because it's actually a two-tower development. They're connected. Each tower, though, was built at different times. So Tower 1 was built in the late 1970s. With 200 units, and Tower 2 in 1999 with 82 units. But this pilot lease that we're presenting before you today only includes Tower 1. Tower 2 is encumbered by a capital advance mortgage from the Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD. That cannot be removed for another several months, but when that, they do have the ability to restructure under HUD's program requirements, then the property will be conveyed to Westminster Tower LP, and then we'll revisit the pilot, whether it's including amending this pilot to include Tower 2 or having a separate pilot agreement for Tower 2. We'll work with council to make that call. Property and tax history. The towers from when they were began in the late 1970s have been owned by a nonprofit, which means the property has been tax exempt since the late 70s. Which means it has not generated any property tax revenue for the city of Kenner or Jefferson Parish. This little diagram here just shows, I don't know if you can see it, but anyway, this is Tower 2 and this is Tower 1 on two separate assessment parcels. Both towers were established with the assistance of HUD under HUD's program requirements, so they've always operated as affordable housing for the elderly. The maximum area median income threshold is 50%, so that means for all of the 200 units in Tower 1, all residents must be considered to have very low income. And let's scroll up just a little bit. scroll down.
Here we go. This is the table. We've included this table in our lease agreement. It just shows the area median income right now, which is $89,800. And these are very low income residents. And for a family of one or sole person here, we have $31,450 as the very maximum income for that property, for residents there. Moving on to the project description, this will be a 12-month rehabilitation. It should start pretty soon, as the company has already acquired all of one. The scope of work includes major improvements to both the building exterior and the parking lot, and then interior as well, including building systems that will be modernized with upgrades to the PTAC plumbing, electrical infrastructure, and lighting. Each residential unit will be completely rehabbed. We'll see the installation of new kitchen cabinets, appliances, flooring, bathroom fixtures, energy-efficient doors and windows. Per the developer, these renovations will bring the property into alignment with current standards, building standards, and ensure continued HUD compliance and support safe and dignified aging in place for all residents. This entire rehab will take place while the tower is occupied, so none of the residents will be displaced. It's a really interesting and great process. They move pretty quickly. The resident will be moved into a hospitality suite within the building, and the work will begin in rehabbing their space. They'll actually be allowed and able to sleep in their room overnight. And then second day, they'll be brought back to that hospitality suite, and the room will be finalized, all the rehab. So one night, or 2 days, essentially, is for each residential unit. So the pilot has been requested to maintain the property's tax-exempt status, which will enable the company to maintain HUD rental restrictions and affordability to the tenants. And then that allows them to place more money into social services for their residents, routine maintenance, staff, and other essential operating items over the long term. Now, moving down into some of the major field points of this pilot agreement, there's a table. Oh, perfect, Kelsey. First of all, the company is represented today by Oliver Haynes, who's an acquisition associate with HPI. The property that will be taken under the pilot are strictly building fixtures and improvements. Any movables, basically, which could be furniture, appliances, machinery, and equipment that are taxable, would have to be reported by the company separately to the assessor's office. Again, capital cost at $16.5 million. They should start this work almost immediately. And the estimated place and service date will be about 12 months from when they begin. There are 10 jobs currently at the facility in Tower 1. Those include property managers, maintenance positions, and housekeepers at an average annual wage of $48,571. And those jobs will be retained as a result of this acquisition and rehab. The tax abatement term, we agreed to a 20-year term. The annual base pilot rent is just a dollar over each year of the 20-year term. That's made to the Jefferson Parish Sheriff's Office as the tax collector of the parish. The tax abatement amount, while we know this has never brought in revenue, property tax revenue for the city or Jefferson Parish, the assessor still must assess the property, and JETCO is responsible for reporting the estimate of property taxes abated on every one of our pilots, regardless if the fact that this has been tax exempt for years. So I did do a calculation. It's about $1.8 million over the full 20-year period. Of that, the Kenner portion is $496,000. Jefferson Parish's portion is $1.3 million. But again, I had to use the information that I have now. I don't know what the millage rate will be even next year. And then reassessments are every 4 years. So that can change, but underscoring the fact that this has been tax exempt since the late 1970s. We will require Westminster Tower LP to submit an annual lessee report. Just with our other pilots, this is showing us that they are doing indeed what they promised to do. It includes a calculation of pilot savings, the breakdown of occupied units by the area median income based on the family size, occupancy rates, adjusted gross income equal to or less than the low income limit for the applicable family size. Also documentation of the required insurance coverages, which you've looked at the table, you see the requirements there. Evidence of their payment of the base pilot rent to the sheriff, and then of course we'll also be due an annual administrative rent for administering this pilot agreement. And we have protections in place for JETCO. I won't get into these unless you do have a question and would like me to. But for instance, we require JETCO to be named as an additional insured on insurance. So that's protecting us. Safety and maintenance, events of default. You know, JETCO has the ability to demand that improvements are made within so many days. And if those improvements aren't made, we have that actual option of backing out of this agreement and unwinding the pilot in. Reconveying it to the company, which at that point would become taxable property. Those are standard in all of our pilot agreements. Specifically for residential, we've added in the prohibition on short-term rentals. So this property has to be operated as promised as affordable housing for the elderly. But force majeure, you know, another pandemic, God help us, or a hurricane that damages the facility, that will not count as an event of default, but we need to see that they're taking the steps necessary to remedy the repairs. So the benefits of the project, of course, the obvious one is improving the quality of life of the elderly tenants in Tower 1 and maintaining affordability for those tenants. But there are additional benefits that the city of Kenner will see, as well as the parish. Sales tax generated on taxable construction materials, job retention of existing employees, and creation of construction jobs, or of the contractors that will be doing this work. Also, the Jefferson Edge 2025, which is our current economic development plan, supports a variety of housing options in Jefferson Parish and as a way to basically retain our residents or attract residents. So this is supported by the Edge. And JETCO has a history or precedent of entering into pilot agreements with affordable housing developers, including the KHA, the Kenner Housing Authority, which our board approved last year, I believe, where we've actually taken the entire portfolio of residential units of the KHA under a pilot agreement for 20 years. The pilot advisory committee met yesterday, and that committee recommended to the board to approve this pilot lease. And the staff recommendation also is approval, as this will be really benefiting these residents, primarily in the tower, ensuring that the units stay affordable. And, you know, again, this project has never generated tax revenue. It's always been exempt, and this will just continue that tax exemption moving forward.
This does have the support of the Kenner administration, the parish councilwoman, and the state representative in the area, so there's no concern about this.
Is it fully occupied?
98%?
98%.
That's the question I have.
Yeah. Any questions? Of course, we have Oliver here. I have JETCO's counsel, Philip Sherman, as well. Any other questions?
The pilot committee met. We asked a good number of questions. It's kind of a simpler pilot because it's never been on the tax rolls. And the only reason it's moving off, the only reason the pilot's necessary is because the previous owner was a nonprofit as opposed to now a private. Do we have a motion or any questions? Moved by Linda. Second by that's not Teresa. Jimmy.
Definitely not Teresa.
It's a weird angle, you know, I've got the name tag and... all in favor? Any opposed? Motion carries?
Yes.
Jennifer?
So in your package, you have May, June, July monthly financials comparing actual budget. I don't have anything unexpected or out of the ordinary to report. We talked a lot about the changes that were known or any major or unexpected at the last meeting to do the first amended budget, which is reflected in the July actual budget comparison for the month of July. So if anybody has any questions on that. Also, just a heads up, our current contract with our auditors ended with this last audit, so we will be searching for a new audit firm and bringing that to the board in November to approve the new audit firm to have them in place by December for the, what year are we in, 2025 audit.
Still in that year.
Still in 25. So that'll be coming in November. But any questions?
Okay. Thank you, ma'am. And Jerry's report?
Sure. I'll update you all on a few things that are happening. I'll start with one of the topics of conversation today, the Esplanade Mall, in addition to the retail coach. We have had a number of meetings now with the parish councilwoman, Arita Bohanna, and the Kenner administration on this. We also, several of us on the staff, met with the brokers that have the listing on the property right now, trying to get creative. I will tell you that Councilwoman Bohannon has this at the very top of her agenda right now. It is an extreme priority of hers to not only get it into commerce, but look at creative ways perhaps that the parish can obtain control of the property, land bank it, do an RFP perhaps for a real developer to come in with real plans. And so be assured that we're working actively on that project. Staying with the mall theme, a couple of us have met now with the owners of Clearview. You're probably aware they have started some construction with the Zias. That's sort of been the linchpin holding up the wholesale redevelopment in that Zias was very happy there. They didn't want to move. So Clearview is actually building that out parcel. That will be a quick construction period. I think they expect to wrap that up by February, March. As soon as Zia's moves out, you're going to start seeing a lot of activity there on that front. And these tend to come in waves, meaning pilot request. We're going to be probably structuring a new pilot with them in order to facilitate that redevelopment as well. We had a great meeting with the Lieutenant Governor earlier this week. He's incredibly supportive of a number of the efforts we're working on, the Grand Isle Jewels, the Food and Beverage Incubator. He's pledged his support. He's been texting Annalisa now nonstop. So,
sorry.
We have a lot of support there on the Grand Isle Jewels front. I want to make sure all of you know that September 18th is Oyster Night. In conjunction with Oyster Night, you all should have received an invite during the day. Darren Chafisi is going to host us over at Deanie's. But during the day, we're going to have several of the Grand Isle Jewels farmers doing a shuck and tell. You're all invited. Hope you can attend. Newell Norman will be broadcasting remotely from the event. So we'll get a good bit of advertising and get the word out as a result of that. On the Food and Beverage Incubator, I know a couple of you all around the table will probably be with me in Washington, D.C. for the chamber fly-in, but our lobbyist, Adams and Reese, Jeff Brooks, is setting up a couple of meetings for us with Cassidy's staff. We have that earmark request associated with the food and beverage incubator. But, you know, I've met with Senator Cassidy on this a couple of times now. He is aware of it. He is supportive. He's pledged his support. We're just hoping we make it through that earmark process, and that the entire process doesn't get hijacked by continuing resolutions and other things that happen in D.C. But we're working on that. The two pilots that you all or the executive committee had approved at the last meeting relative to Elmwood have both been now approved by the parish council unanimously. And so construction should start there momentarily. And then finally, we are excited to say we're the parish is tying up some loose ends in terms of the road construction here. But the new road construction should also start. That start is imminent now, so we'll have some more activity that sets the stage. We're going to begin the process for the RFQ for a hotel developer. We know that the management group that is managing the Ilario Sports Complex here is interested, but as we've just sort of socialized, the thought of putting a hotel in here generated a lot of interest from private developers. So we're pretty bullish that we'll get some really good responses on that. So summer has not slowed down. You know, the staff has been full speed ahead. Lots of efforts. Lots of different priorities. And happy to answer any questions or anything you have.
What's going on at the old airport property? Charles mentioned something about getting it back into commerce, but do we have much control of that?
We don't have any control of it. We participate when invited to participate in the strategic planning process. We've provided input, but the plans for the south side or the old terminal have ranged from everything from trying to attract a maintenance and repair operation, which from an economic development standpoint is ideal. It's a big job creator. You attract more flights because you have more planes coming in and out. At one point we had heard even Southwest was interested in moving back to the old terminal to have their own dedicated terminal. I don't think that's going anywhere. But it's sort of been a wide range of freight, just a freight terminal. The good bit of news that actually was announced this week is that they have broken ground on the commuter or the transit road for the shuttles. So if you're parking at the overflow lot or in the parking garages by the rental cars on the south side, when you take those shuttles, they take the airport access road, red lights, everything. They are going to use a maintenance road that runs parallel to the runways that's inside of the fence. They're going to construct a transit road for those shuttles, so you won't leave airport property, no holdups. But I think that's probably a two-year. I think they said that won't be complete until 2027. At the same time, the new airport, which was built for the future, is already at capacity, and they're now planning to add additional gates, which is good. There are no concrete plans that I'm aware of. They on the south terminal, Annalisa, I don't know if you've heard any differently, but nothing concrete as of right now.
Kevin Doliall spoke to Metairie Rotary about 2 weeks ago, and he said that on the south side that it's possible the old A and B gates might be demolished with the idea to keep the C and D, because those were the newer ones.
Yeah. That's when I mentioned that about Southwest, that was the plan. They would decommission, tear down the old part, and just keep the newest two terminals would have been what Southwest was interested in. But I don't see, I think that's a far-fetched reality.
Any other questions for Jerry? Anybody on the board want to let anybody know of anything or announcements, events to attend or anything like that?
Things to attend. The Hispanic Chamber of Commerce is hosting our annual gala. I hope to see everyone there September 19th at the Hyatt Regency New Orleans.
Are you getting an award again this year or no?
No, this is my gala.
She's giving the awards.
Giving awards to amazing people. Yeah.
That was a nice one last year. Okay, a motion to adjourn?
Motion.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Thanks.
Well done.
Thank you.
Okay.